What are the current mega trends, and what areas could benefit from these trends?
This is Jerry Toome of Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Toome. Jerry Toome is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Toome of Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Toome. This is Michael Williams. Well, Jerry, we are going to update people on the current situation with the economy and stocks because that's important in the short run. But I think it's good periodically to take a step back. We kind of took a step back recently on how we look at investing.
Right.
But it's also, you know, we talk a lot about current trends, short-term trends. But what are the mega trends, the ones that overlap everything when it comes to long-term trends and where investments might go? We want to go there today to help you see what are those bigger trends.
And there's some great mega trends. We'll hopefully get the guy that wrote the article I'm reading from on the radio here and in the near term. It's very good. But we're going to talk about the advantages the U.S. has, longer-term advantages. Again, this is a mega trend, 10, 20 years, at least five-year kind of trends.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, the one thing that I've noticed, Michael, over history, and I've mentioned this to a lot of people that are in the investment industry, and I said, here's what I see. And one guy, I remember, he was one of our wholesalers for one of our real estate programs. He goes, you know, that's very astute. He said, I've never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. And what I made the comment was that most people in our world, they tend to focus on super short-term outlook. And whereas the bigger picture stuff, which is the 30,000 altitude view of looking at it from out, you know, looking out the plane window at the mountains below you, that really oftentimes gave you the really big picture trends. And if you were able to focus on and analyze and correctly identify the bigger picture trends, which to me are, I don't know if it's just because of the way I'm hardwired and the way I'm trained, but I'm just that way. I see those big picture trends mm-hmm. way better than I do the short term stuff. And I made the comment to this guy, I said, you know, what happens is if you look at the bigger picture trends, the long term trends in my last 10, 20 years or longer, and you get your little surfboard and ride those giant waves, then your likelihood of success is much higher, number
right.
one. Number two, the magnitude of your success is most likely going to be much higher. And he stopped
and
for a moment.
I think he also sleep better because when you
That's
have these
true.
Short-term things
yeah.
going on, you don't
That's
worry about them as much.
Sleep. And he looked at me like I'd just hit him with a 2x4 in the forehead. He said, you know, Jerry, I've never thought about that. But he said, that's exactly right. If you get the really big picture trends correct, you mm-hmm. can make mistakes in the short run. They're not fatal, and they won't damage you in the long term. But if you can get the big picture trends right 80% of the time, then you're really well off. So we'll talk about that in the second half of the show.
All right, so before we get there, how about we update people on the economy and stocks? Which side would you like to start with?
Oh, we might as well start with the stock market. So it's an amazing thing to me, the whole dynamic from optimism to pessimism has had a radical 180-degree swing over this year. I was looking at James Stack from Investec. He's one mm-hmm. of our analysts that we take. And he showed, here's the analyst projections on Wall Street. So he showed like 15 different firms, BNP, Paribas, you know, Barclays, you name it, all of the major firms out on Wall Street that have a presence there. And what was their, you know, so you got Oppenheimer, Wells Fargo, Deutsche Bank, all the way down to UBS, you name it. And he wrote down in his newsletter, not a bear among them. And this is, of course, their projections, which the median was about a 12% gain year, you know, over the year of 2025. And right now we're starting out a whole lot. We're in the hole right now for
right.
the year. And we might end up in the hole. Right now, you know, you never know. It's kind of like we talk about with Yogi Bear a lot of times. They'll quote deja vu all over again. it's kind of got that deja vu all over again feel to me, like similar to 2018. 2018 had a pretty significant correction in the first quarter. Then it bounced back, and then about, I'm going off the top of my head here, but it was either August or early September, the market peaked out. And then it started a pretty significant decline. So we had about just under 20% on the S&P, which always, as you know, means NASDAQ went down more than that. But that was a bear market, but it was a bear market really without a recession. I think the market had figured out if the Fed keeps tightening up, because the Fed, and we discussed this a little bit before the show, Fed chairman, when they're newbies, like the calf on new legs just got birth, they almost always make a big policy mistake when they first start out as the chairman of the Fed. In that case, Powell was a brand new Fed chairman. You know, Greenspan made a big mistake in 86, 87. He raised interest rates for almost 18 months nonstop. He was determined to take inflation down to zero, which he later abandoned that goal. But he kept raising rates, kept raising rates, kept raising rates. And finally, we had the crash of 87. Bernanke had the 2008 crash. You know, so most of the time when you have a new Fed chairman, it's dangerous. And Powell was kind of dangerous back then. And he nearly sunk the whole economy into recession and a bear market, and then he changed his mind. Then he decided to turn around and start lowering interest rates again. So the bottom line is that this reminds me a little bit of that market. It also has some earmarks similar to the 2000 market in that we had this massive upswing in tech stocks and dot-coms. Of course, again, the difference is the Mag 7, those are real companies with real earnings. They're not fictional accounts that are, you know, business plans written on the back of a yellow, you know, legal pad like a lot of those tech stocks were. The dot-com mania, don't you know? And it was truly a mania. But we're seeing a pretty radical shift right now. The vast majority, if not all, of the decline so far this year has been attributable to the Mag 7. Let me give you some stats on that. Now, this is stats on their expected earnings growth, not the drop in the stock, okay? But the issue is stocks are valued based on what they think the earnings are going to be. It's an extrapolation of future expected earnings. So let's look at these and take a couple of them. Apple, for example, their expected earnings over the next from the fourth quarter of last year, from the end of last year, actual numbers, to where they project they're currently going to be. And this is not assuming a recession. This is assuming continuation of growth in the economy, not a recession. If we have a recession, this is going to blow this thing up sky high. In a recession, we've gone from, we got our new newsletter, which I believe is going to be available today. If not today, it'll be early next week, called Bear Market Starting? ? And that one's going to talk about it. We can discuss this because the analysts have been projecting, they were originally projecting 14% earnings growth for the S&P 500. Now it's down to about 10. So a decrease in the expected earnings means the stocks are not worth as much, quite right. They're not going to be worth as much if the earnings are lower. That doesn't count what happens if you actually have a recession, which I think we're likely going to have in the second half of this year, probably. Reserve the right, change my opinion later, smiley face. Anyway, but so these numbers here, which have affected the Mag 7, which has crashed, you don't want to say crashed, 16% decline in NASDAQ from top to bottom so far. But the Mag 7, the Magnificent 7 stocks, have been what have been driving this market higher for the last 2 years, and really longer than that if you go back in time. Okay, so Apple is only projecting a 0.5 decline in their average growth rate over the next 12 months. This is from the end of last year till the end of this year,
right,
fourth
so still,
quarter this year.
Still positive growth, just 0.5 less than last year.
Yeah. So they're still making money. You're not talking about losing money.
Right.
And that's the difference is if you have a slowdown in the economy and earnings are growing at 14, go to 10, okay, that's a correction. If you have a recession, earnings on a lot of companies will vanish and you end up with big losses. So you may go from cumulative earnings on the S&P, okay, we're projecting S&P to grow at 10 earnings. Oh, now we have a recession, we're projecting S&P earnings to drop by 10. That just changes everything in a radical amount of time, and it's very quick. And we do know, again, bear markets tend to react very fast. Fear is a stronger emotion than greed. Every behavioral science thing that's ever been studied, the behavior is that fear is a stronger emotion than greed. The average person, according to the behavioral finance guys, 2.5 times more emotional impact on fear than on greed. That's what the science of it says. But the other thing that happens is that people have, when you're in a long bull market like we've been in, they've built up a lot of leverage. So they've borrowed money to make money on the stocks, which works great as long as it's going up. But if it starts going down, they're losing it twice as fast, and that doubles down. They're already dealing with higher level of emotional trauma when it's going down. Now they got the leverage to double it or whatever, and it's quite astounding when you transition to a bear. And eventually we'll have one. I think we're having one this year. I think it's starting. So anyway, Apple's only looking at a 0.5 decline in their earnings outlook. Tesla's actually earnings outlook is a positive 2.9%, so 2.9 points. So that's a positive. And so Microsoft is up 4.8. Those sound great. Are there some negatives in here? Well, let's see. Google is looking at a 16% drop in their growth or earnings. All of these are still positive, by the way, except for Meta, and I'll come back to them. But Google's projecting a 16% drop in earnings. NVIDIA, 21% drop in earnings. Meta, which actually shows a negative at the end of the year, a 51.8% drop. Whoa, baby, you think that won't change the price? And, you know, so part of this is we've already conditioned people that the market's going up, going up, going up, buy the dips, buy the dips, going up, 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 buy the dips, until, oh no, now it's crashing. So what do? We start out still buying the dips. Why? Because we've conditioned investors like Pavlov's dog that you have to buy the dips. And that works until it stops. And then when it stops, it's a dead stop. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, it's not just a dead stop, it's a panic the other direction. That's what happens in bears. Amazon is projecting an 83.6% drop in their earnings by the fourth quarter. So the fourth quarter was bang up great numbers for Amazon.
For 2024, yeah.
2024. The first quarter this year is pretty strong, 39% growth. Fourth quarter, 2.4% growth. Now, I'm not the one that put these analysis together, but good grief, Gertie, this might, I don't know about you, but it might say, hey, maybe, just maybe, there's something rotten in Denmark here. And what's rotten is that everybody, it happens every cycle, Michael, and it's unbelievable in a way, but, you know, it's typical because, again, on Wall Street, we've incentivized everybody for short-term thinking. Typically, what's the outlook for now? People are worrying about the outlook for this year, you know, 6 months out. 3 or 4 weeks ago, they weren't worried at all about it. They were still floating on the euphoria of last year. But the problem is that they're always going to be looking short term. The Trump trade war, if you want to call it that, is definitely negative in the market in the short run. But that's right now the gist of what we know. Now, we had a report coming out, we're recording this on Friday, that the PCE, Personal Consumption Index, which is the inflation rate for people, is one of the indexes they use, is looking like it's accelerating again. So it's rising at about a 4% annual rate.
So basically, it looks like inflation's rising again.
It is. Yeah. If you go back to where it bottomed about a year ago or so, and you watch the trajectory, you had this one giant spike wave, and it came down, and it bottomed. And now, and then the Fed started cutting rates, like they would on target, and now it's turned back up. It's not booming inflation, but it's turned, and now it's starting to accelerate again. Well, if inflation is accelerating and the economy is slowing down, that is the definition of stagflation. And I'm going to remind everybody, the regular listeners have heard this a million times probably, but Alan Greenspan in 2017 made the statement. He said the next decade is going to be a decade like we haven't seen since the 70s, stagflation.
The decade we're currently in.
Decade, right. He said that in 2017. So what is stagflation? You have rising unemployment and rising inflation at the same time. It won't last forever. That, you know, by definition, those will eventually be kind of mutually exclusive. But you can have periods of time, maybe 6 months, maybe a year, maybe longer, where you have inflation going back up again and unemployment rate going back up again. So what does that do? That puts Powell and company in a straitjacket. Now they're like, oh, I've got this straitjacket on me, and they put me in a padded cell. Why? Because inflation's accelerating again, and if I cut interest rates from here, inflation's going to accelerate even more. I have a dual mandate. My dual mandate says, number one, make sure you have full employment. Oh, but the people are getting laid off. We're in the early stages. In our newsletter, Bear Market Starting Question Mark, there's a chart in here, an interesting chart. Now, this doesn't include Doge. So if you look at what the government's doing with, you know, Elon Musk and so forth, that's going to have a big wash. But most of that really will not affect us until October of this year meaningfully, because the numbers for the people that are taking, it's essentially kind of like an early retirement package. Mm-hmm. They're taking an early retirement package, and they don't officially hit the unemployment rolls until the fall. October.
Yeah.
So wonderful time to be getting really bad news, right? October? What was that Mark Twain said? October is one of the particularly dangerous months, you know, along with every other month.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, how many times have we had crashes in October? And why does that happen? I can't really exactly explain. But it does. Some of the worst crashes in history have been in October. Most of them, as a matter of fact, have. Not all. You know, 2000, the dot-coms peaked in the first quarter and went down a bunch. But the bottom line is, I'm looking at a chart in this newsletter.
That was a new market, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. All the old rules don't apply.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
That's why they had to do a different time.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I'm looking at page 7 of the newsletter, and if you haven't gotten on the list, most of you probably have. My goal, and I will emphasize again, this is a goal, not a guarantee. My goal is to start writing at least something small every month and getting it out. I used to. For 18 years, I never missed a single month writing a newsletter. And then a whole lot of world changes happened in terms of my lifespan and what was going on. So
life tends to get in the way.
It does. So anyway, this is from Challenger. Now, they're a private firm. So this has nothing to do with Doge. These are private firms. These are layoff announcements. Now, you can have a layoff announcement and change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't usually happen. Usually, if they've made a decision they're going to cut jobs in a meaningful way, that's what happens. And this is all private sector employees. This is not anything to do with Doge or Elon Musk or the government, which is a whole other matter. But again, the Doge, they're talking about 300,000 employees or people leaving the workforce for the federal government, showing up on the unemployment rolls in October. I think by then we're going to have unemployment accelerating quite significantly by the time we get to that, and we'll be in officially most likely in a recession, in my view. But anyway, the Challenger layoff announcements are shooting through the roof. And again, these are private firms. Not as bad as COVID. That's the one good sign. Okay, mm-hmm. It's not as bad as COVID. But if you look at the level of layoff announcements that are happening, it's very close to where we were in 2008. Now, can you believe that? That's kind of astounding to me, because 2008 was the worst economy we've seen really since the Great Depression, and one of the worst bear markets we've seen since the Great Depression, that one in 1972.
Right. Known as the Great Financial Crisis.
It is. And so we are not quite at the level of the 2000 crash or the 2008 crash or the early 1990s crash, but we're a smidgen off. But we're also shooting straight up. So right now the arrow is shooting straight up in the sky. It is not curling over. It's not peaking out. It's just going straight up. So I think that the trade uncertainty index, I think in the short run, Trump has maxed out on his popularity. I have a feeling it's all going to come back to bite him. So it's a dichotomy, because on the one hand, what he and Elon are trying to do is fix things that are broken, that have been broken for decades, that need to be fixed.
Because nobody would touch it.
Yeah, nobody else would have the gumption. I want to use a different word. Kahuna's in Spanish. But the bottom line, not Spanish anyway. So bottom line is, never mind. Bottom line is, they're doing something no one else really had the courage to do. I'll put it that way. But in the short run, if you cut, so I'm looking at a chart on page 8, consumer confidence expectations starting to tank again. Small business CapEx plans, that's where they build a new building or grow their business. Expand, those are tanking again. CEO confidence is tanking again. University of Michigan sentiment index is tanking, and it's near recessionary levels. So, again, my goal is not to be a perma bear. It's not to be a negative nilly or always on the wrong side. The bottom line is we want to be positive when it's positive, and we want to be realistic and negative if it's negative. Right now, I don't see a lot of hope for avoiding a recession this year, frankly. I think we're going to have one. I think we're probably in the early stages of it. Q1 looks like it will be negative for GDP after a really good quarter in the fourth quarter. But the fourth quarter is all news. Fourth quarter is not really relevant anymore. We're in the first quarter looking into the second quarter. And now we've got all these massive layoffs that are likely to start anytime, especially with the government in the fall. And the trade is going to be, it's going to be rough. So this is going to be a rough ride. So the question is, will Trump stay the course? Will he and Elon, I know Elon will, but he's, you know, the decision maker at the end of the day is going to be Trump. Will he tie himself to the mast in these tough seas? I don't know the answer to that. My guess is he probably will. I think probably because my guess would be he's like, okay, I'm going to be a one-term president. I know there might be, and even Bessette had some stuff he said about this. Okay, the economy's kind of rolling over. We're trying to wean the country off of excessive government spending. There's going to be a detox period. There's going to be a period where, okay, this heroin addict over here is going to have some shakes. He's going to have a long period of withdrawal from the easy fix of government spending.
Good in the long term, but it's going to
exactly
going to suffer a little
in the short run.
Yeah,
and that I don't remember the source on this, but the last time we looked, I quoted this a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago. Almost 25% of job growth last year was government, not just federal. So the issue is, if you look at the stock market, Peter Berezin with Bank Credit Analyst, who is not a perma bear, by the way, he's projecting 4,500 to 5,000 on the S&P 500, maybe falling as low as 42. A lot of that depends on if there's an outbreak in the Middle East. If Israel decides to take Iran out, all bets are off. This is just a garden variety correction. That's a 25-30% decline. Right now, defensive stocks are leading the way. Healthcare, energy is not really what I would call defensive. It's cyclical, but it's had a big run this year. Utilities, consumer staples, those are defensive stocks. And if you look at the shift in leadership, you've gone from the Mag 7 leading the way just a little over a month ago to things like healthcare, utilities, and staples leading the way now. The money, as one guy put it, and I remember this because I used to have a waterbed when I was in college. And when Mona and I got married, she hated it because I'm a big guy through the discus. You know, I'm a big guy.
Lineman.
Yeah, I was an offensive lineman. And she said they didn't have baffles in these first generation waterbeds. So the waterbed was one giant big old mattress. It was about 18 inches tall.
One big bladder
full of water. And she said, every time you would turn over in the middle of the night, I'm riding the wave.
I could just imagine, because she's not very big, so you could just, she'd go flying off.
Yeah, it would just, she'd have to ride the wave and hold on to the side so she didn't get thrown out of bed. Anyway, but the way that finally ended, we were moving into a house, and Hannah, our daughter, she liked to play like mommy sometimes. So she walks in to, we just moved into a house, so it was our first rent house. The first time we'd rented a house instead of being an apartment, she walks into the bedroom, and she had mommy's high heels on.
Oh, no.
And the waterbed was deflated laying on the floor. And she walked right across the waterbed in those high heels. And I screamed at her, said, stop, what are you doing? You know, scared the liver out of her. She starts bawling, like, crying. And sure enough, I tried to save that dude, and it couldn't be saved. There were so many holes in it because that high heel punched holes all the way through every layer of it.
I wonder if Mona didn't put her up to it.
She was thankful. Mona was like, good, we'll get rid of this stupid bed. But anyway, that's a piece of trivia you didn't need to know, but I'm glad you did anyway. So bottom line is, I think that we're in a market that is shifting toward defense. I think we're probably going to have a radical shift. Ned Davis pointed out that when you have a weak first quarter for technology, and this one's starting out, this is the weakest since 2002. It's the sixth weakest since 1972. So technology starting out very weak to start the year typically persists throughout the year, but it also means that there's going to be rougher issues. So you've got defense playing, basically going on first base at this point. Profits had a really good quarter for fourth quarter, but they're going to be coming down. Mag 7, again, they've got huge declines in earnings projected. And, you know, we may have a bounce. We usually, in the when you have this big of a correction in the market in the first quarter, by the end of the quarter, you may end up with a really good bounce simply because, number one, it's very oversold, which we talk about. That's on page one of our newsletter called Bear Market Starting? But you also have what we call account rebalancing, where a lot of your variable annuities and stock accounts and all that stuff, mutual fund accounts, automatically rebalance. So if the market percentage, let's say it's 60-40 blend, and stocks go down and they're now only 57% of the holdings, then 3% gets automatically put into stocks at the end of the quarter. So the quarterly rebalancing should stabilize things for a while. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about what the technicals are telling us, the economy, and then we're going to deal with these big picture stuff. That's really where I love. I love the massive mega trends because, again, like I said before, the odds of your success are much higher when the mega trend is in your favor and your magnitude of your success potentially is much greater. More with Smart Money in just a moment.
All right, well, we'd like to take a small break here to remind you how you can learn more about Cornerstone Financial. You can go to cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. Learn more about Jerry Tuma, myself, Michael Williams, and the rest of our team at Cornerstone. You can get Jerry's special reports. And again, very soon, the next one is coming out. It is in the hands of our trusted people to back at our broker-dealer to make sure we've dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's. So once we get it back from them, we will be going out. So you want to make sure and sign up for that if you haven't yet at cornerstonereport.com. You can also catch up on any broadcast or interviews you've missed on our website or find us on podcast at Spotify, Apple, and Amazon. Again, just trying to make it easier for you to access us on your time, on your schedule. And again, if you're like me, you like to listen to stuff when you're out for walks or jogs, that's an easy way to access our show. If you'd like to reach out to us for a free consultation, if you'd like to talk to someone who looks at mega trends, who looks at the short term to make adjustments to the portfolios and talk to you about your goals, your risk level, and make sure it all fits you and what you need, you can call us to see if you are a good fit for us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. Well, Jerry, before we took that little break, we were catching everybody up on the short-term stocks and the economy. Got a little bit more to do on that, and then we'll get to the mega trends that we're a little bit more excited to talk about.
Mega trends are a lot of fun here. So technical analysis-wise, here's some technicals in the market. The 200-day moving average, as we know, is kind of a demarcation line. Kind of like, okay, if you're going into war, and there's a line that you don't cross because it's got the landmines on the other side. That's what you're looking at. You're looking at, okay, there's a demarcation. Now, the market can temporarily drop below the 200-day average. Again, you throw the oldest day out, put the new one in, re-average it every day. But when you break it decisively, if you stay below it, that's usually a bad sign. And the other thing we're watching is if the average itself rolls over, that's usually a bear market. Right now, that's not happening. The 200-day average is still going up, so still theoretically a bull, but it looks to me like it's living on borrowed time. If it doesn't have a really big bounce here soon, it's living on borrowed time. Equal weight S&P, even though it's equal weight, so that the Mag 7 is not 39% like it was at one point in December, the equal weight S&P 500 has also rolled over and is negative. The advanced decline line, measuring the number of stocks going up divided by the number going down, is negative. We haven't had what's called a breadth thrust yet. So usually when you have a short-term bottom, you have a one big day or 2 days in a row where you have this massive, okay, 10 to 1, 15 to 1 up day. So every for 15 stocks going up for everyone going down, that's lacking at this point. But even though the market has gotten to extreme pessimism for NASDAQ, so you could have a theoretically have a really big bounce at this point, and I would be, I'm really going to be surprised if we don't have one. At some point, what would have to happen to keep us from having a short-term bounce, essentially, because, again, I use the old term oversold, which, again, is kind of like you push the beach ball underwater if you're at the coast, forgetting the waves for a moment, let's say you're at the lake instead of the coast, so you're not having to worry about the interference of the waves hitting you. If you take that beach ball and you push it down 2 feet, 3 feet, how far can you go down? There's a point in time when you're not strong enough or heavy enough to keep pushing it further mm-hmm. down, and it pops to the surface. That's oversold. So the market in the short run, and this is on page one of the Bear Market Starting newsletter, shows just how oversold the market has gotten. This is the bull bear spread. I'll let you get the newsletter and read it, but it's not been this low, but four times this decade. So this is the fifth time. Anyhow, the economy, we more or less talked about that. Inflation is rising again. That's going to kind of tie the hands or put them in a straitjacket for the Fed. The expectations are stagnation's coming. Now, here's a couple of facts. Consumer confidence. So again, our goal is not to be a negative Nilly or a perma bear at all. It's a when we think market looks great and the economy, we'll tell everybody. Well, you got to measure. It's kind of like having the scales of justice. You got to measure the the good and the bad, not be a perma bull cheerleader. You also don't want to be a perma bear doom and gloomer either. Both sides are error. The perma bulls are right more often than the perma bears are,
right?
Because we don't have the bears as often. But anyway, consumer confidence right now just hit the lowest level in 12 years. That puts you back to 2013. Expected job availability. This is a survey, again, for consumers, lowest in 12 years. Any lower than that, you're in a recession. You know, so you're right on the verge of that. Imports, we saw a massive spike to beat the tariffs, but the personal consumption expenditure index is now back up to close to 4%. That's going to make it weak. Retail, it's going to make it very difficult for the Fed to lower rates. And retail sales are weak. So everybody has gone from ebullient euphoria to concern and worry. And it happened almost overnight, you know, about three or 4 weeks. Now, you ask yourself, okay, is that something that blows over? Or is that a major turning point? That's the question. If this is something that just blows over with no longer-term ramifications, you know, hey, be merry, be happy, you know. Don't worry, be happy.
We'd be happy with that.
Yeah, but it doesn't look that way to me. Now, one of the things that nobody's perfect, but one of the things that I, for whatever reason, over my professional career, which now spans 44 years and counting, I guess 45 years now, is I seem to be able, by God's grace, to identify the bear markets better than most people out there. You know, four out of the last five major bears, including the housing bubble, which if you count that one, I think that's six. But the bottom line is this one looks and feels like the beginning of a bear. I think it's not mature yet. This right now is probably a baby bear. He hasn't been born very long. He's crawling out of his hole, his cave, and his mama's kind of watching over his shoulder. But it looks to me like it's the start of that. And if you look in our newsletter, that's one of the things we point out. And you just be the judge for yourself. So we're acknowledging fully that the market's very oversold in the short run. But the longer-term top indicators, we enhance this, some of the charts so you can read the numbers on here. These are big charts. Stocks as a percentage of household financial assets, the highest on record, 48.2%. Stocks as a percentage of stocks, bonds, and cash with insurance companies and pensions. Second highest level, just barely below the all-time high, which was in 2000. Foreign held stocks, just barely below the all-time high. If you look at the cash and mutual funds, the lowest on record. If you look at the replacement cost of the assets versus market value, the highest on record. If you look at the trend for book value ratio, the highest on record. So what happens? Oh, and this one just is crazy to me. This one shows the number of people that felt like the market was going to go up. What was the expectation for stock increases over the next 12 months? The highest on record, going back to late 80s. So without going any more detail than that, you can see these charts, educate yourself, pray over it, look at it, just get, you know. One of the hard things, Michael, as we know about investing is not letting your emotions drive your investment decisions. And the problem from my perspective, one of the problems, is that our industry tends to be mostly perma bulls. Okay, buy and hold and always buy stocks. When should I heard one guy say this years ago. This was before the dot-com crash. I think he disappeared after this. But anyway, and I'm not going to smirk at that, although I did. You know. But anyway, when's the best time to buy stocks? Any day the market's open, you know. I'm kind of like, oh, give me a break. You know, so there. It's like the book of Ecclesiastes. It says there's a time to laugh, a time to cry, time to plant, time to harvest, time to fight, and time for war, and time for peace. You know, life is cyclical. No exceptions. There are cycles that we have to deal with in life. This, to me, is the beginning of a down cycle. I don't think it's going to be a 2008 variety, but the wild card in that whole thing, again, is what happens with Iran and Israel this year. Trump clearly is not just going to sit on his hands because he's already trying to take the Houthis out for them bombing the Red Sea and clogging up shipping lanes for the whole world. So I think Trump's going to push it. I think he's going to push. And honestly, you know, I hate to say this on national radio and the internet, but I think somebody's got to take these guys out. I think that the Iranian people in power over there right now are the mad dog of the world. Probably North Korea is more mad, but North Korea doesn't have as much power as, but they do have a nuke. Iran apparently doesn't, although they've gone to from 300 or 400 centrifuges to 12,000 just since Trump was in office the first time. So I think it's a perfect storm coming, and if that hits when the market's already weak, you got a big issue.
All right, so that's all the short-term information. Let's get to our mega trends,
right?
Because these are the ones that really pique my interest.
And it is very interesting. And I also want to talk a little bit about the stock cycle. I may start with that one first. This is just a for what it's worth thing. This is not something I would, you know, I wouldn't sit down and with my spreadsheets and put this in your projections here, but I would look at this. The market tends to have about a 17-year cycle, and I've got a chart showing it going back to 1910. And about every 17 years, you have a significant change. You go from what we call secular bull markets to secular bear. Secular means more than a decade, typically. That's normally how you define a secular bull. And it's a hot and cold, so it's Ecclesiastes. Time to laugh, time to cry, time to plant, time to harvest. So you have a big run in the 1920s. It started in the 1910s, right after World War. It really got rolling after the end of World War II. You had the Roaring 20s. Then you had the Great Depression of the 30s. So that was a whole bad cycle. It lasted 15 years. Actually, closer to 25 years if you go from top to bottom. Then you had a period of time from the end of World War II, 1945, to 1966, where you just, happy days are here again, and the market went up and 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 up until it topped out in 66. And then it went up and down and up and down, up and down, like a yo-yo with a man walking across the street sideways until 1982. Then it went up and up and up when Reagan took over in 1983 until 2000. So you had about another, how many years is that? That's about 17 years, right? Mm-hmm. 17 years until it topped out in 2000 with the dot-com era. Then you had a period of time where it had a problem. You had the dot-com bust. You had a massive bear market there, secular daddy bear market. Then you had 2008 crash. And it took you close to 17 years to recover back to that old top. So now we're in another one of the uptrends. So the good news, no guarantees, so don't plug this into your computer. So Jerry said we're going to do, you know. The issue really here is the likelihood is high that if we do have a bear market this go-round, which I think we're about to enter, it's unlikely to be an 08 kind of deal. It's unlikely to be a once-in-a-generation type deal. If this 17-year cycle has any relevance going forward, then it really ought to be sometime around 2032 or 34. But that might be your next 2008 would be a good potential estimate. So anyway, but let's talk about the bigger picture megatrends. So this is a great article that I'm reading from Wealth Shield. This is their 2025 annual outlook. And again, I think this would be great to see if we can get this guy on the air. He's talking about what we call really big megatrends. Now, again, I'm going to restate in case people missed the first half, and it's really worth repeating anyway. I said this again to one of the investment professionals I know, and he stopped and just his mouth kind of fell up, and he goes, you know, Jerry, I've never heard anybody say that before, but he said, you're absolutely right about this, but nobody else seems to think this way. Why? you talk to corporate directors, where do they get? They get stock options once a quarter. If their company hits a certain stock strike price, then their options are good, and then they get a huge bonus of new cash from the stocks. So the officers of a major corporation are incentivized to make the numbers work on earnings so they can get their options, which is a huge part of their compensation, which varies depending on the company. So when you do market analysis, you have your market analyst, you have your bull and bear analysts, the guys that will look at what each company's doing, and they'll say, okay, well, let's get out the microscope and let's analyze everything that we can imagine on all the financials and then come up with, well, are we bullish or are we bearish and why? Or are we thinking it's going to accelerate a higher rate of earnings or a lower rate of earnings and why? And then the corporate, and then they have their earnings calls once a quarter, and that's when the head honchos at the corporation tell the analysts what to expect. And then they say, no, your analyst is too high. You need to lower it down a little bit. And then the game Wall Street always plays is, okay, you were projecting $10 a share for us. No, let's try to get it down. Maybe get it down a little lower. No, maybe an 8. No, let's do the limbo. All right, so we can get it down to 7. So now we've dropped our expectation from 10 to 7. And then we come in at 8. And everybody's happy because, oh, we beat expectations. Yeah, and does that happen? Almost every quarter from most companies. And so that's just the way the game works. That's the way Wall Street works. I'm not saying it's evil or wrong. I'm just saying understand the rules, because most people don't understand that that's a big part of the rules. So let's take a step back, though. Instead of looking at quarter-to-quarter results for the market, quarter-to-quarter outlook for the market, because right now that's what's happening. We've got a lot of uncertainty going on, and this uncertainty is creating a lot of, you know, it's stopping purchases. If you knew you might be one of the challenger layoff people, not counting the government jobs. I saw a thing on Facebook recently that showed the number of houses for sale in Washington, D.C. It was like somebody had, you know, chicken pox all over. The whole area was covered with houses, little red dots showing up where the houses went for sale. It was like thousands of them. I'm like, well, I can see why. That creates a lot of uncertainty, and it's probably not going to be very good for the housing market in Washington. But anyway, the issue here is the short-term thinking is right until it's wrong. And in every cycle, it reaches that point, which John Templeton called the point of maximum optimism. Let me explain that. Now, Sir John Templeton, one of these days, I'm going to write a book on the investing all-stars of all time. And I may only take 5 of them. James McKeever, my mentor, would be one of those. But I would say, you know, Warren Buffett certainly would make the team. He's probably number one on the team. I would say Peter Lynch, who ran Fidelity Magellan years ago, had the highest numbers by far. He was like Babe Ruth in his time frame. He blew away people in the mutual fund arena, just wiped them out. He was the best of all time. John Templeton would make it too. Why? He was a contrarian. And for those of you who don't know that story, I haven't told it in a while on the radio, I knew a guy that worked for Templeton. He's now retired, but he's one of the stock pickers for John Templeton. And the Templeton funds, of course, merged with Franklin and became Franklin Templeton. But he was a legend, and he was also a pioneer. What did he pioneer? He pioneered global investing, not just U.S. investing. Most people focused back then only on U.S., and that's what we call a home bias, H-O-M-E, home bias. In behavioral finance, you tend to know what's around you best, and in this case, we're dealing with the U.S. And right now, the U.S. is probably 60% of stock market capitalization anyway. But Templeton became very famous for not only investing in the U.S., but going all around the globe. And so one of the things that this particular guy, and I'll leave his name off for privacy's sake, we were talking about him, and he was laughing out loud. He's laughing out loud. We went to dinner together. He said, you know, he had a reputation as a top-notch stock picker, but he really wasn't. He said, as a matter of fact, he wasn't that great at picking individual stocks, but he was great at the macro. And what happened was he had started his mutual fund, I want to say 1968-ish or so, and then when before the crash happened in 74, which was the 2008 for that generation, he decided the market's too overvalued. He was a value investor, kind of like Buffett. And so he sold, basically went almost completely out of the market into global bonds, And then the market crashed. The S&P went down 50%. The Nifty 50 darlings of the day went down between 70 and 80 and 90%. And then he sold the bonds and went back in the market at the bottom. And he was laughing. He said the market, the compounding effect, the market could never catch him because of the compounding effect, because he did so well in that crash. So there are advantages sometimes to knowing when to be bearish. Anyway, that didn't cost you any extra. Let's talk about the megatrend advantages. And if we run out of time on this part, we'll continue this next week and or get our guest on. Here are some major megatrend advantages the U.S. has over the rest of the world. These are great things to be living in America. Energy independence. We're now at a point where we are energy independent. And if somebody blows up the Middle East, it will affect everybody here because the crude oil price will go through the roof. But we're not going to be held hostage like we were in the 1970s, where they were able to hold us for ransom over the price of oil. So we have abundant oil, natural gas, and I had one analyst, one of our listeners once said, her dad worked for Devon Oil. And he said, I'm convinced that the Gulf Coast around, which would now be the Gulf of America, around Florida has as much oil as Saudi Arabia, but no one will let us drill there, the permitting. So one of the things I hope Trump does is just open everything, open the Anwar in Alaska, open the whole Gulf. I don't mind. I think it makes sense to me just aesthetically to say, okay, you got to get 5 miles off the coast or 10 or something, just so you don't go to the beach and see oil wells pumped up everywhere to block your view of the beach. But they should just, again, drill, baby, drill. Agriculture, we can feed our whole country and foreigners as well, and I'll be happy, happy, happy if Kennedy gets his way on getting a whole lot of the garbage out of our food supply. Here's Quaker oats in Great Britain, 3 ingredients. Here's Quaker oats in the U.S., 15 ingredients. I'm like, and all that stuff's really good for me, I bet. The dollar is still the reserve currency of the world. That gives us some significant advantages, which we won't have time to get into great detail today. Global military power, number one in the world. So these are huge advantages, but these, are, again, are megatrends that make the U.S., and the U.S. might go through a period where foreign stock markets outperform us. We had that under the Bush administration, especially the emerging markets. But the main thing is these are huge megatrend advantages. The America First agenda. Again, he needs to deregulate industry, energy, deregulate, 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 drill all over, everywhere. You don't even have to drill it all in the land area. Just the ocean enough would be massive. I think you could probably match or replace Saudi Arabia as the number one oil producer in the world if you really did this on a large scale. We're going to have large-scale infrastructure. We have a good infrastructure now, but it really needs updating. And I think that's what they're going to do with America First. They're going to say, hey, we've got to upgrade all of our infrastructure, including electricity. Upgrading the energy infrastructure, a lot of it's antiquated and old, and we're now going into space age technology. AI will definitely be a productivity growth boom. You also have crypto. Crypto could be meaningful over the long term. I'm not going to talk about each one of these in depth because we don't have a lot of time on today's show, but we'll see if we can do another show on this. One of the things they mention in this article is the beneficiaries will likely be real assets. What do I mean by real assets? I mean not financial assets like stocks and bonds. That doesn't mean the stock market necessarily will perform poorly. It's going to shift, in my view, because we are currently, and this is what I listed in the negatives, the entitlements are not going to go away. 85% of government spending essentially going forward is going to be primarily all the entitlements, Medicare, Social Security, et cetera, and interest on the debt and defense. And you can cut defense some, you cannot cut it out. So those entitlements are out of control, and they're going to lead to humongous deficits. Matter of fact, I'm looking at something. This is from Ned Davis, but it's taking the information from the Congressional Budget Office. And again, I need to write a newsletter on this to upgrade everybody, update them. It said, driven by net interest and mandatory outlays such as Social Security and Medicare that will grow with aging demographics, the baby boomers are older, Congressional Budget Office projects the deficits will continue to swell in the next decade, even without an extension of the tax cuts. So, and that assumes no recessions, no crashes. That's just continued steady growth at 2.5% or 3%. So there's going to be a point in time when the national debt is out of control. That's my concern, especially if we have issues with military being big over time. So even though, for example, I'm reading from Bank Credit Analysts, Trump is touting he's closing the Department of Education. I'm in agreement with that. Much of the functions will be, such as administrating Pell Grants and student loans, will just be transferred to other government agencies. So it's not going to be a complete revolution. And one of the things I think you're going to see, this is not a term most people are familiar with, but it was prevalent in the 1970s, called debt monetization. That's where the Treasury has to issue more debt to pay its bills, and the Federal Reserve buys it with money they create out of thin air because there is no other buyer. That's something I think we're headed toward. The national debt, I think, is still out of control, even with the government cuts and interest. I think that means goodbye to your 60-40 portfolios, because I think, historically speaking, a stagflationary environment, which we're still in, as Alan Greenspan said, it's rough on the market, the stock market, but it's disastrous on the bond market. And I think you've got to rethink how you're doing it. And if you want consultation information, give us a call at 800-327-4285. 1-800-327-4285. Go to our website, cornerstonereport.com.
Jerry Tuma's Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma's Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.